got Patrick Garmison sitting here with me today. Patrick, I know you've got a lab, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I just had to put my – I had a red bone coon hound. She was 14. Just had to put her down back in October. But there's something special about a good hunting dog and just a good dog in general.
Just have a good buddy around the house.
Yeah, and but as good as they can also be pretty dang frustrating at times. And, you know, so one of the things I know I'm thinking about right now is what kind of dog to replace old Whiskey River with. And so today we're talking with Kyle Scully. Kyle's the owner of River Bottom Retrievers over in Summerdale, Alabama. And Kyle, tell everybody a little bit about what you guys do over at River Bottom.
Hey, guys. We do mainly gun dog training. We'll do obedience training on medium size breeds and up. We also do hunt tests, field trial type stuff, if that's what somebody's into. And we try to stay on the road pretty much all spring and all fall doing that.
Explain to me the difference with, say, gun dog training and field tests.
Man, it all kind of bounces off the same principles. With gun dog training, you know, obviously we're just going to lean more towards, you know, the shots being right over the dog's head. You know, keeping it like hunting distance related. With field trials and, you know, tests, hunt tests, the distance can get a little longer, especially like your master test. You know, 100-yard, 150-yard retrieves are very, very normal in those tests. And then a lot of times the shots are actually coming from the field. So, you know, it's just kind of different from the setups we do.
So if we had to...
The fundamentals are all the same.
If we had to relate it back to, say, a hunting practice, you would maybe say gun dog training would be a little more relatable to duck hunting, and field training would be a little more relatable to, say, something like pheasant hunting or quail hunting.
Well, not really. I mean, the tests are still, you know, are waterfowl related.
Okay.
You know, they're throwing duck. There's water. You know, it's a lot of getting there the right way. You know, straight lines, taking the water, taking the cover, taking, you know, whatever the terrain changes are in their way to get there and do it correctly. And like I said, we still do all that with our gun dogs. It's just, like I said, just little more in depth when you're getting into the master test and all.
Well, I know you guys do obedience training, like you say, for some of the medium-sized dogs. What type of duck hunting dogs? Today I want to talk with you specifically about duck hunting. What type of duck hunting dog breeds have you guys worked with over at River Bottom?
Man, we've done just about anything you can imagine. Predominantly, we have labs. You're going to go through some golden retrievers, Boykins. Every now and then, we'll get pointing breeds. They're a little different. You know, you kind of have to approach them at a different angle. They're not typically built to sit still, so it's a whole lot of that kind of obedience going on before you get a whole lot of gun dog training going with them, just to kind of reprogram their brain to sit still instead of cover ground all the time. Man, we've done some of the German breeds, the Drossars, I probably butchered that, the poodle pointers, all kind of stuff, man.
That sounds, those pointer breeds, that sounds a little bit like Patrick, sit down.
Yeah.
Sit down, I'll give you a treat later. that's interesting. So y'all do train a number of different duck hunting dogs, but y'all focus on one breed for your breeding, right?
Yeah, we just pretty much breed labs, man. We've had a lot of really good success. There's some really good breeding available in, you know, the southeast general area. It's really worked well for us. That's kind of what we stick to.
What do you do with your breeding? I mean, I know there's a lot of variance in labs. I've seen... I've got friends that have labs that are, you know, down in what I would say maybe 45-pound range. I mean, they're smaller statured dogs. And then I've got friends that have dogs that have that big old lab, blocky lab head. And they're, man, look like they're close to maybe 90, even 100 pounds. Why is there so much variance in the Labrador Retriever?
Man, it's all what people have been breeding for. You know, the big blocky heads. There's somebody along the way is bred for that. We tend to not really breed for what they're going to look like, but what's going to be between those ears, you know, that brain. We're looking for something that, you know, the last 5, 6, 8, 10, 20 generations have been bred to retrieve. You know, that's where you get your dogs that are just not going to stop, that they love it. They're not going to ever quit on you in the field. They're the dogs that make your hunt test dogs and all that good stuff.
So when it comes to, you know, picking a dog, I'm listening to what you're saying about that. What I heard you talking about was kind of that drive that the dog has. And, you know, when a guy down here or anywhere for that matter is picking a dog for duck hunting, what are the best for the types of hunting that we have down here? And I'm specifically talking duck hunting. I mean, we're, you know, you've got, say, flooded timber. One guy may hunt mostly flooded timber. Maybe he's hunting a lot of wood ducks and hunting in the Mobile Tensaw Delta and that type of area. Then you may have another guy that makes it over to Louisiana or the Mississippi Delta and is hunting, you know, flooded fields and that type of thing. You know, specifically, let's talk a little bit about the types of hunting we have and what breeds are best. And so, you know, obviously you guys breed the lab. And is there a particular type of hunting that you feel like river bottom retrievers are best for, or are they pretty versatile?
Man, we're looking to do versatile. You know, I want a dog that I can, like you say, I can put in the boat with me and go hunt the Delta. Or if I want to drive up the Mississippi and hunt flooded fields, no big deal. Let's go do that. Flooded timber. It's all, you know, kind of bounces off the same general ideas. Now, the big thing is exposing your dog to those scenarios. You know, there's only so close we can get in any kind of training to the real deal. So if you get your dog out and put him in the scenarios that he's going to be hunting in, so say he's hunting off of a boat, well, take your dog out in the boat. Let's expose him to that before hunting season. Pit lines. Let's put him in the dog box in the pit line. Let's throw a couple bumpers out of there. Really, on the different types, I feel like it kind of bounces more off of preparation than the breed. You know, it just, they need to be exposed to it and see what they're kind of going to have to be expected of. That way, you know, you can be confident that they're going to be able to handle it.
That makes sense. What, yeah. I mean, what about picking the right dog for you? Okay, so what I mean by that is, you know, within a litter, if we look at a litter of puppies, you can tell that there are personality differences within those puppies just by standing around them and seeing how they follow you around, how they're interacting with each other. Is there something that a person can do or a resource out there where they're trying to pick not necessarily the best dog in the litter, so to speak, but they're trying to pick the best dog in the litter for them and their set of constraints? Maybe they've got two pets at home, or maybe they do all their hunting in flooded timber. Is there anything that they, or maybe they only hunt four times a year, you know, and the rest of the time that dog's a pet. Is there anything somebody can do to pick the right dog from the litter for them?
Man, the biggest thing that I look at in a litter, first off, I want to pick the right litter. You know, I want to look at it and see what their parents look like. You know, I mean, like I said, I'm not big on looks, but if I'm not looking for a big lab, well, then I probably shouldn't be looking at, you know, the dad's 90 pounds and the mom's 70. You know, maybe I need to be the dad's 70 and the mom's in the 50s, you know, if I'm looking for a little bit smaller. You know, guys who do a lot of P-row hunting and stuff like that, you know, they don't want a big 70, 80, 90-pound dog. They want a little smaller. I've got a dog here, Fever. She's, I mean, 45 probably pounds at her running weight. And, I mean, she is just as hard a going dog as you've ever met. But in the P-row, she lays still and doesn't move, and you can go anywhere you want to with her. But as far as picking a puppy, man, I look at drive mainly for me, you know. Kind of the way we look at it is, if they'll go, we can pull them back. You know, we want that dog to be going as hard from day one as they'll ever go. Now, not to say that if they don't retrieve from day one, then they're not going to. You know, they're puppies. They've been in the world for 6 weeks. You know, they've not been exposed that much. But a lot of your good breeders or your good trainers who do some breeding are going to be exposing these dogs to pigeons early on and throwing stuff for them and kind of, you know, putting them out there in the world, letting them see stuff, getting them in the water. That's what I'm looking at. I'm looking at how, you know, who's raised these puppies, how have they handled them from birth to 7 weeks old. And I want to see that they've been exposed to a lot early on.
Is that so talking about being able to see a puppy's drive or something like that, I mean, how just a ballpark, if somebody was going to pick a a dog out of a litter, and you were being around the whole litter, would you know, what would be some signs that somebody would look for?
I usually will take a little ball, tennis ball with me, or a clipped pigeon wing or duck wing, or just something that I can flip out there and just kind of watch them, you know, see who tends to take off after it first. You know, get a little one-on-one time with them. You're making an investment, you know. Spend a little time, you know, an hour there. You don't want to push them to their limit where they just all shut down and they want to take a nap, but spend a few minutes with each one, just kind of, you know, see what they'll do. Like, a lot of times I'll take a tennis ball and we'll get out in the yard and I'll just kind of bounce it down the yard, and whoever takes off after it, all right, let me spend a few minutes with that one. Let me see what she's into, or he, or whatever. But, you know, just kind of test them like that. See what, if they will run after something. They're not necessarily going to pick it up, but at least run out there and check it out.
You know, one of my biggest questions when I got my last dog and then when I get my next dog is, which gender should I choose? I had a female before. That having a female, you know, now in my head I'm kind of like, well, I probably ought to get a male this time. Is there any recommendations you have for a person who's thinking about a duck hunting dog? That does gender matter?
Man, a lot of times I tell people this: a female's in heat twice a year, about a month each time. A male's in heat 365 days a year. you know, that's the biggest difference. You know, I personally have both. I have a male. He's my older dog. He's the dog I hunt with, typically. I have a female as well. She's my baby. I still hunt with her some. She's kind of more my hunt test dog, really. And I've got a puppy on the way of another little female. For me, females play a little better because if they turn out like I want them to, I can breed them. You know, it's a little easier to recoup some of your investment if, you know, you do go spend a lot of money on a dog and breeding and training and all that. To have a nice female, you can breed them and you're never going to make money, but you can kind of recoup some of your investment that way.
Right.
But there's something to be said about a nice male as well. You know, you train and test and trial a really nice male, and now it's going to take a little longer to get that money because, you know, it's a little less per breeding, but you still have the opportunity to, you know, to kind of get back some of it there too. So it's kind of a coin toss, whatever you're into, whatever suits your needs best.
That makes sense. And I mean, you know, when it comes to temperament, it sounds like, you know, temperament's more dog dependent, not necessarily gender dependent, but it also can depend on the training, right? I mean, what's the first step if somebody's gotten their dog, whether it's a duck hunting dog or just a hunting dog in general, whether it's a lab or one of the other breeds, what's that first step in obedience training?
Man, I preach socialization. You know, we see dogs that come in from all walks of life, and the dogs that have gone everywhere with people, with their owners, you know, they just, things don't bother them as much. You know, they can come out here and something new is not that big a deal. You get the dog that's, you know, been kind of cooped up at the house for the first 6 months of his life and, you know, just knows the house and the backyard. Well, when they see something new or, you know, they experience a new place or experience big groups of people, you know, for the first time as a 6 month to a year old dog, it's a lot bigger deal then than when they were a little puppy. Like I say, I preach a lot of socialization and just getting them involved in life.
That makes, you know, sense. What can a guy do? Say who's a busy guy. You know, he can't have his dog in his truck all day long, and he's you know, got a family. He's got a lot of responsibilities, but he's does want to get a new dog and he wants to socialize them properly. Is there a rule of thumb? You know, like, hey, every day you need to get him out and just take him on a walk or take him to a dog park. What's the right way to socialize if they don't have that option?
I kind of lean away from dog park. There's just a whole lot of variables there that you can't control. You know, shot records and you know, how those dogs behave. But man, if you just take them Lowe's, Home Depot, PetSmart, anywhere like that, that, you know, you can get them in front of people, that's great. If you have a hunting camp, take them to the camp. Let them ride around when you're up there. Put them on the four-wheeler with you. You know, obviously, you know, hold them so they don't fall off. But you know, put them in any kind of scenario that they're going to be in later on in life. And like I said, they don't have to do it all day, every day. You know, we all have jobs, and I'm lucky enough to be able to have my dog with me all day, but, you know, most people aren't that way. You know, when you get home in the evening, like I say, take him for a walk, walk him down, let him go to the neighbor's house with you, you know, whatever. Wherever you go and he can go,
take him.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the way I was with my first lab. Hey, Kyle, I got a question. Kind of go back on that gender deal. Is, you know, a lot of people buy a pet and they have no intentions of breeding. When would be a, do you see, what are some of the negatives or positives on the spayed and neutering?
Man, I defer to vets on a lot of that stuff. I'm not the biggest expert in all the insides and outsides of it, but my biggest thing with spaying and neutering, even if you don't plan to breed, I usually try to get people to wait until they're about two. At 2 years old, we don't breed until they're two. You know, we get their hips done, you know, make sure all their hips are OFA certified, their eyes checked and all that. But that's my thing. At two, you know, you might have the best dog that's ever walked the face of the earth, and if it's 6 months old, we had her spayed, we can't ever pass that on.
Yeah,
I can echo that. I had my red bone spayed very early, and I always kind of regretted doing that. She turned out to be a really good dog, and I don't know if I would have bred her, but I think I would have liked to have had the option to do it.
Right.
And I just never, it was never even a, you know, consideration. It wasn't an option. To step back to that socialization for a second, how do you feel about only having one dog? Is that a problem? Can that be overcome? Does a dog need another dog around?
No, man. Especially a lot of times people want to buy two puppies at a time, and I really, really, really don't like when people do that, man. They kind of get their own pecking order.
Mm-hmm.
I like one dog at a time. I'm a nut. I've got three at the house, and I have one coming. but I'm a little different than most people. Most people don't need four dogs.
You're right, special, Kyle.
Yeah, special. We'll call it that. man, one dog can be great because they're your best friend. You know, that's my biggest thing is I want them to be, you know, my best friend, and they want to do all this retrieving stuff now, or even just obedience. You know, when we get into formal training, we're not treat training. We're not. You know, hey, buddy, do this. I'm going to give you this because at that point they're working for themselves. We want these dogs to be working because it makes us happy. So, you know, we're using pressure to show them what we don't want and then praise and love and showing them what we do want. So it just builds into that idea that, hey, I want to do what he wants because that's awesome. That one dog, you can really bond and, you know, kind of get that even to another level, I feel like.
Well, you talked about socialization being that really important first step, and that's interesting to me. I being a lay person, I wouldn't have necessarily thought that when it comes to a hunting dog. But what's that second step? Well, what do you think is the next right step? Once you feel like that dog is socialized, when does that socialization kind of, I don't want to say end, but when do you feel like a dog is socialized, air quotes, but, and then what's that next step?
Man, the social, it kind of never ends. You know, they're always seeing new stuff, especially when they're going with you. But it just kind of is an evolving process that just becomes natural with life. And really and truly, as far as puppies, before you get to really, you know, we start our formal training at 6 months old. So kind of before that, a little informal, you know, some puppy stuff. We do use treats, you know, sit and get them doing that. And then if it's going to be a hunting dog, I really want to see people build that retrieving desire. And it's, you're going to think I'm crazy, but the best way to build retrieving desire is to limit retrieve. You start today and throw one, get them super excited, throw one retrieve. They come back, get them super excited again, and then quit. So now you're putting up the bumper or the toy, and they're wanting more. So they're getting put up or getting going on with their day thinking, man, I really wish he had thrown that again. Well, tomorrow, maybe throw them two and then put it up. Same thing, get them super excited, then put it up. So, you know, in a week or two, you're throwing 15 or 20, and they're still just as jacked up about it at the end as they were at the beginning. What I see a lot of people do is they go out and they just think it's the funnest thing and the coolest thing in the world that their dog will bring this toy back. Well, they do it and do it and do it and do it and do it, and then the dog decides to quit on their own. That's not good because now when you shot, you know, you got an 8-man group and you've shot a, you know, an 8-man limit, Well, at the end, they're like, that isn't that fun anymore. I kind of want to quit. You never want that dog even thinking quitting is an option. They want to be going the whole time.
Yeah, that makes really good sense. Well, Kyle, man, there is so much to cover here. You know, there's no way we could do it all in one show. But I do appreciate you being on the show today and telling us a little bit about picking a good duck hunting dog and, you know, getting them started the right way. If folks want to ask you some more questions or maybe look into river bottom retrievers, how can they get in contact with you?
Man, we're on social media, Facebook and Instagram. We do not have a website quite yet. We're working that up right now. Otherwise, they can call me, 251-979-3989, and love to talk with them about anything they want to know.
All right. That's Kyle Scully, River Bottom Retrievers. Thanks, Kyle.
Thank you.